Lowe's sabe que a todos nos gusta ahorrar, especialmente en esta temporada. Por eso escogimos deals buenísimos para Early Black Friday. Obtén gratis una herramienta selecta DeWalt, Cobalt o Craftsman al comprar una batería o un kit selecto. También tenemos árboles de Navidad preiluminados selectos desde $59.98, porque nunca es muy pronto para poner el arbolito. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Hasta agotar existencia, selección varía por lugar.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Outside of Work, where we explore who we truly are beyond our job titles. As you can tell by my background, I have moved. It is completely different. I'm still getting used to it, trying to figure out, is this going to be the permanent look for Outside of Work right now with the space I have? It might be. But I'm just gonna work with it, futz with it, and see what we come up with. But overall, words cannot express how excited I am to be back in New Jersey, back in my home state, near friends, family, everything. Everything just feels so, so good. You don't realize like how much you miss or, just how much coming back to the familiar just like makes everything feel all right. Like things are going to be a-okay. Okay, but enough about me. I am super excited for this week's guest, Tara Dower. Tara is an ultra runner, so she does a lot of ultra marathons and through hikes. These are like 100-mile races, y'all, and hikes up and down these mountains. It's not easy stuff. And she actually just went pro this year. I reached out to Tara after reading an article about how she absolutely smashed the overall supported fastest known time on the Appalachian Trail. So she's not the fastest woman. No, no. She's the fastest person to ever complete the 2,197.4-mile trail in the quickest amount of time. Okay, for those of you who don't know, the Appalachian Trail runs from Maine all the way down to Georgia. And usually it takes about 5 to 6 months to complete the trail. Well, y'all, Tara completed it in 40 days, 18 hours, and 5 minutes, completely beating Carl Sabe's previous record by 13 hours. So not only did she kill it, she beat it by 13 hours. Absolutely insane. And Carl Sabe is someone that she looks up to and actually reached out for advice before she started this insane, insane challenge. And along the way, she helped raise nearly $100,000 for the Girls on a Run organization. Just an absolutely amazing person. Now y'all understand why I just had to reach out to her. Tara fell in love with the outdoors at a young age with family camping trips. And in 2019, she got nicknamed Candy Mama for always bringing candy on the trail and basically being a mom to everybody there. In our conversation, we talk about what it took to complete this feat. We're talking about avoiding wildlife, dirt naps, and teamwork. Something that really surprised me was she talks about imposter syndrome. So even though she completed this amazing record, she still has self-doubt like the rest of us. As a paranormal junkie, I had to ask her if the rumors about the Appalachian Trail being haunted were true. And she talks about a potential skinwalker encounter. Listen, you guys are gonna have to listen. I'm gonna leave it right there at that. And we wrap it up with who Tara believes she is, what legacy she wants to leave. You can follow Tara along on her 100-mile runs and races, her time out in the wildlife, and see how you can also support the Girls on a Run organization by visiting her website at tara-treks.com. And you can also follow her on Instagram at tara.dower. This conversation was so fun and just so multifaceted. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. So without much further ado, here's Tara Dower. Tara, Tara, thank you so much for joining me today. Oh my goodness, we have literally a hero, like literally a superhero on our podcast today doing unimaginable things. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm here in Boulder and it's a really nice day out. I'm about to go on a run after this podcast. So I'm looking forward to that.
You're still running?
Oh yeah, this is going to be the first like official trail run. I'm a full month later. So, I've been chilling.
Okay. What have you been doing to like relax? Because after that, you will not see me for 6 months. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so I mean, I've just been doing a lot of like I've been listening to my body a lot. That's what I've been saying. Mm-hmm. And so what that looks like is just eating whatever I want, whenever I want, sleeping as much as I can. It's generally hard for me to like sleep a lot. So, I mean, it's been, you know, whatever sleep I can get and not running or feeling pressured to like get back into any athletics, even though like I have this desire to go outside. I mean, it's generally just to like go slow because when you go so fast, you can really appreciate the moments that you can go slow.
Exactly. I want to ask you this later, but like you just beat the Appalachian. Okay, hold on. Appalachia or Appalachia?
I say Appalachian, like Appalachia.
That's what I say too.
Okay, yeah, I think that's correct just because I say it that way. But, you know, people from, who says Appalachia? It's like people typically from the West say Appalachia. I've met some people from Pennsylvania that say Appalachia. But everyone I know says Appalachian.
That's what it is so funny. I was having this debate with my boyfriend. He's like, it's Appalachia. We're from the Northeast. I'm like, sir, do you know how many Southern people I've talked to? And they're like, it's Appalachia. No, I'm mixing them together. But okay. So for this podcast, it's going to be Appalachia. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You went on and you beat the AT speed record by 13 hours. You did it in, how long did you do it in?
Yeah, I did it in 40 days, 18 hours and 6 minutes.
Yeah, that's what my records say here, which is crazy.
You know, and it's funny, everyone's been telling me how, you know, all these stats. I haven't actually like done the math myself, but everyone just tells me these facts. Like they're like, yeah, you beat it by 13 and a half hours and this was your time. And I've just accepted. I'm like, yeah, that's what I did.
There you go. And you beat one of the greats to do it. Carell, right? Carell Sabe.
Yeah.
What was that like? Oh my God.
Well, you know, during the entire record, it's like, you know, I have a lot of imposter syndrome. I think like any athlete kind of feels a level of imposter syndrome. It just feels like so much bigger than yourself. And especially when you're going against some of the greats, you know, I felt a level of this like, oh man, am I good enough? Like, can I do it? And I view these athletes like Carl and like Scott, who's held the record before, and Carl Meltzer, and all these people in such high regard, and they do deserve all that high regard. But then you get out there and you're actually doing it, and it feels like so overwhelming to be going against these people. And then when the record finally came a possibility and I actually beat it with my team, it was so surreal and overwhelming. It's like, how did this happen? Like, I view myself in this one way, and then I view all these incredible athletes in this other way. And you're kind of forced to like view yourself in that same regard. And I still haven't quite processed that. And a lot of it I owe to my crew, but I kind of sometimes deflect that high regard and say like, well, you know, my crew had a big, big role in this entire FKT, and I'm not disregarding them, but oftentimes I am deflecting and saying, you know, they did a lot of work. They did incredible job. And I think I'm still coming to terms with the fact that like, I am, it's so hard to say this, but I'm learning. It's so hard to say, like, I am one of those great athletes, and it does not roll off the tongue easily, and it's weird, and it's awkward, and it's fumbly, but it's true, I guess.
That is wild to me. That literally you like beat some of the greatest, and you're here talking about imposter syndrome?
Oh my gosh, yes. Wow. Yeah.
How does that manifest for you? Like, how is it that you have the imposter syndrome?
I don't know. I think Heather Onish Anderson, who has a lot of incredible records on long trails. She's done self-supported records. So she doesn't have a crew, but she had back in the day, she had the overall FKT on the AT and the PCT as a woman, just incredible athlete. And she's just incredible. But she talks in her books a little bit about that imposter syndrome. And like, especially after the PCT, her first FKT. And she talks about like, was that a mistake? Like, how did that happen? Like that, there's no way that could have that happened. Like, and I think like, maybe there's, you know, maybe I'm not sure. Maybe something as women athletes, like there's something about, you know, that imposter syndrome that comes on a little more naturally. I've known men to have that feeling, that imposter syndrome, but I obviously chat and talk with more ladies. So I think it might be more natural. I know for me as a woman, in my experience, this isn't everyone's experience, but we've kind of been taught a certain way of operating in the world, and especially in the world of athletics. And I don't think it's as encouraging to be that confident woman who says, I'm going to go out there and break this record, or I'm going to do this and that. And then even after you've done it, it's not encouraged to like gloat about it, but kind of be a little more subdued. So I wonder if there's something. Yeah, exactly. Humble about it. Yeah. I wonder if there's something to that. But again, I don't know. I'm still processing it.
I guess the best way I could compare it to is because like I found myself like working on like one of the top morning shows in network TV. And, you know, it's been something that I've been like working so hard for. I'm like, I'm going to be a producer. I'm going to, you know what I mean? Just like that was almost like the pinnacle to me. And then when I got it, I was like, oh no, it can't be for, they just needed, someone to fill this seat, or I'm okay, but they need to, you know, I need a little bit more work on this, this and that. And if anything, I found that my confidence got less when I was, you know, at performing at this high level that everybody works so hard to get to. And it goes right to your point. Like, what is that? That like, we can't, like, I feel like men are like, yeah, that's my role. You know,
I deserve it.
I'm supposed to be here. Exactly. But then for us, it's like, oh man, it's a fluke. You know, maybe I'm duping somebody and it's working. That's basically, that's how it is. But I don't know what it is that we need to do to change that, to be like, yes, we are meant to do this. Like, you're literally the fastest human, not even woman, man, whatever. You're the fastest human on the Appalachian Trail. You know what I mean? So like, what do we got to do to be like, yeah, we are that bitch. Like, what do we got to do?
I think like more representation. I think like, over time, having more women that I've been told I'm like a role model, but I think there's like more need for women role models that are unapologetic and who are out there doing their thing and throwing their goals out there and, you know, doing it really well. And I mean, there's like, we were just talking about like track athletes, but I think, you know, a lot of women track athletes are, you know, adopting that unapologetic, like I'm the best. And I love that confidence. But I think, especially for me, especially for like some, you know, other women I know, I think it's just like not natural. And I think more representation would be awesome.
I completely agree. That is such a good point. Like, once we see ourselves in those roles doing it unapologetically, there's no question. You know what I mean? There's no question. Yeah. And so, okay, I want to get to know a little bit more about you, Tara. We're going to get back to this record, but let's rewind it a little bit. Where did your love for the outdoors come from?
Yeah, it came from my parents. My mom and my dad I grew up in North Carolina, and at the time we lived in Wake Forest, North Carolina. And right now Wake Forest is kind of like hustling and bustling, but back in the day it was right outside of Raleigh. And back in the day in 1999 when we moved there, it was pretty country. And there wasn't a lot of things to do when I went to high school. Like, it was starting to get a little big, but we still would go to the Sonic down the road. That was the place to hang out.
That's
So if
awesome.
that tells you anything. But
Exactly.
so like a lot of the times with my parents, we would go on a hike or we'd go and camp. My parents were really big. They had a, back in the day, when my parents were just becoming like young professionals, they didn't have a lot of money, but they still wanted to go on family vacation. So they bought this really cheap, cute pop-up tent or pop-up thing you pull behind on your vehicle. And we'd go to parks and we'd go to campgrounds, and that was our vacations, was just hanging out in the outdoors. And I was perfectly happy with that. It was so much fun to wake up in the morning, see my dad already out on the bench drinking his coffee and hanging out with my mom. And so like and my brother obviously was there too, and we would play in the outdoors. I think like I just have a lot of fond memories of spending time in the outdoors, and for it to be a space where it just felt like anything was possible. And so like but we grew up in New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey for the first 5 years, and then we
Let's
moved
go,
to,
Jersey.
oh yeah, are you
Jersey
from
girl.
Jersey?
Yep. I just moved back to
Yeah.
Jersey, actually.
Oh, cool. Where in
Yep.
Jersey?
Hackensack. How about
Oh my
you?
gosh. Yeah, I grew up near Lake Mohawk,
Let's
Sparta.
go.
Yeah,
Yep.
yeah.
Morris County. Love it.
Yeah, Morris County. Yeah, so like oftentimes we would go around parks in there, but then I remember moving to North Carolina and we did more tent camping. So, very outdoorsy family. But then like I guess like I kind of had to figure out what my desired outdoor activity was. I remember going on hikes as a kid and not being like completely enthused with going on hikes, and it's kind of funny where I am now in life and what I've done in life and how trails have become such a home for me. But yeah, grew up in the outdoors. My parents were very outdoorsy.
That is awesome. I have to ask, do you believe in like callings? Like if you feel like you're called to a specific type of thing or career or whatever, do you feel like that?
I think so, because I mean, if you have a calling, you're kind of more naturally going to like be drawn to those activities, So I would say yeah. I've never even thought about that too long until you said that. I think so. If you're drawn to like being around people or to selling, if you are really good at like selling things to people, you become a salesperson. Or yeah, really drawn to money, you're going to become a finance person. I think like there are people who are more likely to be drawn to certain things, and I think it would be hard to get into those things if it wasn't a calling, certain careers or activities.
Do you feel you were called to the wild?
I think so. I think I was, I've always felt called to go back. I went to ECU, which isn't a very outdoorsy school. We have the beach and we have, swampy areas.
Where's ECU?
ECU is in Eastern North Carolina. And it's about, I think, oh man, I don't remember, maybe like an hour from the beach, but it's kind of sort of in the middle of nowhere. Right now it's like it's becoming a really big school, but I really wanted to go to Appalachian State, go to the mountains and spend time in the mountains, but didn't get into Appalachian State. So I went to ECU and kind of would always go back to the mountains to visit friends who went to Appalachian State. And when it came time to go on like my first section hike, obviously I was going to go back to the mountains. So I think I've been drawn, very drawn to the mountains. And even now, like I would rather spend time in these mountainous areas than anywhere else, or just like in the outdoors.
That is awesome. And so then how the heck did you then transition to like ultra marathons and speed races? Because that's just a whole nother level now. We're not wearing Lululemons anymore. We're out here, actually doing the thing.
I've viewed it as like this ladder. Somebody said that in one of the podcasts. They're like, well, this is kind of like, it's not so much a career. You haven't like had this on your horizon, like what I'm doing at this moment in my life. I haven't
That's
had
true.
this as my end goal. It's just been a ladder to get me to where I feel confident enough to like be, go out and be a professional athlete or try attempt to be a pro or like go for the Appalachian Trail record. So it's just been like stepping stones of confidence to get me there. And if I look back when all of this started in 2012, 2013, I wouldn't have thought this is where I would be in life. So I mean, it really started, I had a love for running. I had a love for endurance racing when I was in like middle and high school.
You did track and field.
In cross country, and
Nice.
I had a desire to do those things, and watched a documentary in 2012, 2013, I don't remember. And it was in my dorm room, and I watched about the Appalachian Trail. I was like, wow, this thing is so cool. I want to make this a goal, and I want to do the Appalachian Trail from end to end. I want to do it in, a regular through hike, which looks like, anywhere from like 5 to 6 months. It takes people regularly to backpack this entire thing. And that was my goal. And when I graduated college, I went out in 2017 to attempt this through hike, and it didn't quite go the way I wanted to go. I've talked about this story a lot, but it was just a it was a moment where I learned a lot about myself. It was a failure. I got 8 days in and I had a panic attack and had to get off. And it was a very physical manifestation of anxiety, and that
I
was something I was not
see.
used to. So I got off trail and kind of took 2 years to learn more about myself and went back in 2019 and completed the thing from end to
Good
end. I
job.
went northbound and completed the hike in 5 months and 10 days with a lot of great friends. I made a lot of lifelong friends. I mean, I haven't lived my entire life yet, but I foresee them to be lifelong friends. And so this is a long story, but I mean, like I said, it's like this
No.
ladder up to where I am now. And after that, I got more after working for some people who kind of encouraged me to get into these like endurance efforts, like FKTs, like fastest known times, and ultra marathons. It took about, 2020, I did the Mounds of Sea Trail across the state of North Carolina in the fastest time, and then wanted to test my limits and see if I could do a 100 mile race all the way through, and did that a year later in 2021. And after my first 100 miler, I was like, okay, this is it. This is what I'm going to be doing for a very long time. And I got into ultra marathons and like professional running after
That is awesome. So
that.
not only did you break the AT trail record, but you also did these other two. Oh, did was it this other one or this other two, right?
Yeah, I did. Well, I did the Mounds of Sea Trail, which is
Yeah, that's the
1,175 miles, across the state of North Carolina. I did the Bette McKay Trail, and I've done the Colorado Trail, FKT.
Amazing. So you had So going into the AT trail, you had some accolades under your belt already. And I love that you say, I love that you say that 2017 was a failure, but was it really, right? Because I feel as if you had to go through that to understand, girl, you are not ready. You have to get emotionally prepared, you have to get physically prepared, you have to do all this research, you can't just go out there and do it. And then so then, when you actually did do it this time around, it was like a massive success. Where it took you, in 2019, 5 months and 10 days to do it. Now, you beat the entire record. What do you think you learned from 2017 up until you were preparing for this speed record this year? What did you think you learned that helped you actually be successful this time around?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up because I keep people keep asking for my advice. Like, what would you tell somebody who wants to get into it? And there's two things I say. There's the first thing I say is like, don't be afraid to fail, because I think that failure in 2017 taught me a lot about myself in a really unique way, a very intimate way. Felt like, because my entire life leading up to 2017 was just to prepare for the AT, and I was telling everybody I was going to do this, and I was going to be a thru hiker, and that was my identity. And so to have that stripped away and to be left with like all I have is this failure, I think it taught me a lot about, a lot of hard truths about myself and failure, and just like how I take failure, but also like my motivations and desires, and on top of all of that, like what anxiety is, because anxiety was the reason I got off. And I didn't want to repeat that again. So, people ask for my advice. I say failure is so important. It teaches you so much about yourself. And without failure, I wouldn't be where I am today. Imagine if I successfully threw out the AT in 2017, like where would I be in life? I don't know. So I would say that's like a big piece of advice. And what I learned about myself, just more specifically, I would say I did learn about my anxiety. I learned about techniques to kind of keep me centered and to keep me present in the current moment. And whatever I was doing in endurance efforts, I think this is like an important thing to do. A lot of people
That's a
can
good
view the
point.
AT, like 40 days on the Appalachian Trail. That's a lot of time, right? And you cannot look at the entire thing. Otherwise, your brain is gonna fry. Like there's no way you can
Literally.
plan for all that. Yeah. So I think like learning from 2017, staying in the moment, making that mile, whatever experience you want to have out there. Like if I wanted to go fast, like I did in 20 or this year in 2024, like that's the goal. But back then it was to experience and enjoy the trail. Like I want to make that mile whatever I want that mile to be, and I want to stay there in the present moment and not look to the future. And anxiety is the fear of future, the fear of unknown, and just understanding who I am and understanding like my motivations. And I am a very goal-driven person, and but I also like I know that if I'm always focused on this goal, it tends to overwhelm me. And I think being able to look at that goal and separate it from like a separate desire, for instance, like enjoying the culture and the community and the people you're with, and having smaller goals, I think is incredibly important. There's so many things I learned from 2017. I couldn't possibly go over all of them, but that's just a couple.
Absolutely. And then to also have the resilience to pick yourself back up, learn from the mistakes, and then, do it again for this time around. You give a lot of credit to your team. You say you couldn't have been able to do this without them. And so, oh, wait, I'm so sorry. Let me rewind. When was the moment I'm like getting ahead of myself. I'm so excited. When was the moment
I love
you,
that.
when was the moment you realized, yeah, let's do it again? And then how did you prepare?
Yeah, so I, my entire trail career started from, being interested in just spending time on the Appalachian Trail. So, I've had these successes in ultra marathons and other trails. I was like, well, like, what if we go and see if it's possible to set a record on the AT? And I had a lot of mentors encouraging me and inspiring me to go out there. And I just felt like I was, like you said, I was kind of.
Did you think you like the idea of like let's see if we could break a re like that did, were you like sleeping there one night? You're like, oh, let's see if I can. But like, where does this idea come from? They're like, I think we could beat this record. That is insane.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think that's a natural train of thought for a lot of people, but I was lucky enough to be on the Bette McKay Trail in whatever year that was. What was that? 2022, and I set the overall FKT on it. And a little bit about the Bette McKay Trail, it's the first proposed 280 miles of the Appalachian Trail. So I mean, it's generally like the same sort of mountains you're going to be hiking on the AT. And I set that FKT and I finished and I was like, yes, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, and I want to sleep for days. But if I had to, I could probably keep going.
You could keep
And
going. Oh, wow.
so I had this thought. I was like, well, I'm like, I am. That was like very, that is the most similar experience you can get to the AT. And I felt like I could most likely keep going. So that's kind of where the idea sparked is like, I don't
I love
know
that.
if I could set this FKT. I don't know. I don't know for sure. Nobody knows 100% if they're going to do something, especially in the athletic world.
That's
But
true.
I think there's a lot of athletes that are just willing to try and attempt, and you never know if you don't try. And I just wanted to go back to the AT, somewhere where, like I've mentioned, my entire trail career started, and I wanted to just attempt and see if it was possible.
Whoa. So after you finished out and you're like, I feel good. Actually, if this is part of the AT, I think, let's see what we could do with that, right? So then you start gathering your people, together. How did you all prepare for this?
It started about real intense planning started about a year and a half before the
A year and a
actual,
half.
I got the idea like way before that, but I would say it started when my friend Rascal, who I met in 2019 during the thru hike, she's my best friend. It really started the planning, and I felt comfortable planning when she signed on and she wanted to be, the crew chief of the attempt. And I, of all people I could pick from, it would be her because she is totally dedicated to the cause. She is competitive, which is super important. She's someone who can remove herself from that like friend role and effortlessly be the boss and be that crew chief that needs to get the job done. So I felt like safe knowing she was on the team. And then from there, I just added, my mom, she was retired at this point and she knows how to encourage me better than anyone. So I wanted her to be a part of the crew. And from there, I just kind of added people on, asking around, saw if people could like come out for like a section or two or like anywhere from like an hour. I had my friend JP, he came out for a month, 4 weeks, I think it was. And so I got my people around, and after that, it just I had to plan the first 10 days, because you kind of want your crew to you want them to get into that like role of things. Like it's hard to plan daily mileage and then also like be doing all these other tasks on top of that. So I kind of wanted to give them 10 days of like buffer. So I planned out the first 10 days with mileage, and then I have a camper van, so that was already prepared. I just had to like switch out some batteries in the van and get a oil change and a tire rotation. And there's a lot of planning. I also had to construct a lot of spreadsheets. I have like this huge binder, and it's just a bunch of documents that I've constructed for
Oh
that
my gosh.
attempt.
What was all in there?
Oh man, yeah, there's so many. There's like I had my friend Kenny help me with this, but it was like trail towns that are less than 5 miles away. Like there was a document that had all the records, all of the previous records that I could go for, all of their daily mileage. It had every single road crossing. It had the directions, the coordinates, and if it was how many vehicles this road crossing could hold. There was a lot to it. And maybe it was a little bit of overkill, but I'm also like a very intense planner. It's one of my skills. I'm no imposter syndrome with that. I can plan something really well.
I love that. You're like a Boy Scout to the T, literally, always prepared.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And especially when you're going on something like that's going to be so mentally and physically draining, I think you kind of have to have the plans already out so you don't have to use your mental that you need out there, Oh my goodness.
And so that's another thing. It's like we had to set up these jobs, 'cause for me, all I had to do was, once I got out there, I was giving all the control up to the crew. They're going to make all the decisions. Rascal and my mom were going to be the final decision makers. They were going to decide things. All my job was, once I got into that role as the runner, all I had to do was run and eat, and that was it. And so I tried to prepare them as be best as possible. And luckily, like they were one prepared, but they're also like, they already know all of these things, all the things I know, they know already. So, yeah, it was really easy to get into that role for me, because I didn't have to think after I got on the trail.
You were Lewis Hamilton, they were your pit crew, and how much trust
Yes, exactly.
you
I love that.
you
I love
had
that
to
you picked Lewis
relinquish
Hamilton and not like and not like somebody
Lando
else.
Norris? No. Of course not.
Oh,
Like it's just like, to be successful and you just had to put your complete trust in them. How much did you trust these people that you had around you?
Yeah, I mean, it might sound cliche to say I trust them with my life, but I mean, that's really what it came down to. Like, I might not be my entire life and my like livelihood and my like can I live or not? But it was very much like they chose when I slept, when I ate, how many miles I did. They kept track of all that stuff, and I didn't really have to. I trusted them a lot. I didn't have to think. Maybe sometimes I like doubted some things Rascal was telling me, but that's also due to the fact that I was very tired and ornery and a little sassy, maybe a little diva-like. And maybe I argued to her and she wouldn't argue back, because there's no arguing with Rascal. She's the boss. What she says
I
goes.
love
So
it.
I could say all I want, but there's nothing that's going to change her mind.
That's a good crew, but that's a good crew
So yeah,
director. All right. That's what you need. Like, no, girl, I said what I said. Let's go. I love that.
No, legitimately though, like she took on that role, and it was she was the boss. She was the
Awesome.
number, the head honcho.
And y'all did it. I think you were averaging how many, like 54 miles a day or something like that?
Yeah, I think it came out to
Something
54
crazy.
miles a day.
You're like, I'll accept that number. That's another
Yeah.
Love it.
It's kind of silly thinking about it. That is too many miles.
Girl, you were doing more, like you were doing two half marathons, two marathons a day, basically. That's
Yeah,
nasty
gosh.
work. Wow.
I
Do you
know, I
do you
know.
look back at it like how the heck? Like how the heck were we out there doing that?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of going back to that point, what I learned in 2017, like staying in the moment, staying in that like individual day, and just making whatever mile you're in the best mile. I think every day was just, I don't know if I can do another, 57, 58, 60, 55, however many miles Rascal had on the schedule. I didn't know if I could do it, but every day I would go out and I would at least attempt, and it just worked out. And there was a lot of days that I would argue with Rascal, like, I don't want to do that many miles. I want to sleep more. And it
Your
ended
dirt
up,
naps.
every day, yeah, the dirt naps. Yeah, I need some sleep. Every day, like, either she'd adjust it a little bit, not a lot, maybe by a mile or half a mile, or sometimes, if I was lucky, 2 miles, which is crazy. But every day was just getting up, saying, "Here, we're gonna do our best. My body and my mind knows what to do. We're gonna do our best, and we're gonna see if it's possible." Because there's nothing you can do, like in the moment. There's nothing. Where was I going with this train of thought?
You
Oh
still got that
man,
mind
this
fog a
happens a
little.
lot. Oh yeah, a little bit of brain fog. That's still involved. I forgot. It'll come back to me, but
It's
yeah,
okay.
it was every day just waking up, trusting myself, trusting the crew, and just going out and seeing what was possible. Oh, I remember what I was gonna say. So there's like nothing you can do in the moment. Like, say your body feels great, your mind feels great, but for some reason you're like, I don't know if this is possible. Like, you don't know what's gonna happen in the future. You might as well just keep going until your body fails you, or until like you cannot keep your eyes open for another second. You might as well keep moving at that pace until something happens.
Wow. I think you said in another interview that like you got this great advice from someone that was like, your body is just meant to run. So just like go out there and do it. When you were out there, what was that? Was that what ended up happening? Like you're just on autopilot.
It took a while to get on autopilot where my body would instantly start running on the flats and the downhills. But I remember in the beginning of the trail, like oftentimes during the first like week, and I mean for me it was the first like 11 days, your body is really tired and sore, and eventually your body does get used to that amount of miles, which is crazy to say. Your body
That's
gets used to it. It's
crazy.
still hard. It's still hard, but it's less hard than it would be in like the first week. And I remember some mornings in the first like week or two, it's just like so hard to get up. It's so hard to move efficiently. It's so exhausting. My feet hurt. My body hurts. And I remember thinking, like, I watch a lot of, and I listen to a lot of stuff from Carl Sabe, who held the record prior to me. And I trusted a lot of what he was saying because obviously he did something right. So he would say, like, I've read the book Born to Run, but he read it and he internalized this book. And it's a great book to read for anyone who's interested in like running or getting into ultra marathons or even just like, endurance or even speed stuff. But in the book, they talk about how like our bodies were born to run, like, we were made to run. And he internalized that, and he just forced himself to run through these FKTs, these long. He's done the PCT twice, and he's done the AT, and he's a Barkley finisher. He's an incredible athlete. And so I was like, I remember on days where I was so sore and so tired, and my body did not want to run. All I wanted to do was walk slowly. I just remember thinking, like, in my head, I have these sayings that go around in a circle, and it's like, just trust Carl, trust Carl, trust Carl. And I would just force myself to run, even if it was uncomfortable. And I'm so glad I did that because, it saves so much time. Even if you just run for a couple steps, like, it's going to be a lot better in the long run if you're running those couple of steps than it would be if you didn't. So I just, in my head, in Maine and in New Hampshire, is like, okay, like, it's flat. Just trust Carl and just run.
And just run. Wow, that is amazing. And I'd completely mispronounced Carl's name. I said Carol, Carl, in the beginning, but that's
Well,
amazing. So,
there's a debate. There's a debate for sure.
oh
Some
my
people
gosh, the
say Carell.
Appalachia.
I know. Some people say Carl. Somebody corrected me one day and said they said it's Carl. I was like, okay, I'll say Carl for now
Oh.
on.
All right. Yeah, because I've been listening to so many trying to figure out like and everyone was saying Carell, so I was like, oh no, it's Carl. But okay, that's good to know. As a person with
I have no idea.
as a person with a different kind of name, I totally get it. So but okay, so and so you were just like, you know what, just trust Carl, just do it, just keep going. And so take me through a day or something. I'm hearing you're taking these like dirt naps and and literally on the ground. I was looking at the video like, girl, why are you on the ground right now? That's crazy. And then you'd run for until like 9 p.m. or something, and then people would feed. So like take me through your day, like how you all got this done.
I love that you like say y'all too. A lot of people are
Oh.
like, what did you do in your day? I was like, there's so much to it that is so beyond like just me. Like, the crew is such a crucial part, like I've already talked about a thousand times. But so what a regular day would look like. I always woke up at 3 o'clock, 3 a.m. no matter what. It was hard sometimes, difficult to fully wake up, but 3 a.m. was always a wake up time. And then
Wow.
Rascal would be up first, and she would feed me, hand feed me breakfast. And usually breakfast was about 500 calories. She would do
Wow.
like a assortment of different things, but she always mixed it up. And as she was feeding me, I would prepare my feet. I would like slap Luco tape on my feet and get my socks on and get my shoes on. And I would do some leg swings. I'd get out of whatever sleeping apparatus I was in, and I would do some leg swings. And then usually the start was like 3:40. I try to get out by
3:40.
3:30. I've been saying 3:30 a.m. But thinking about it the other day, I was like, I wasn't ever on the trail by 3:30. It was usually like 3:36 or 3:40. But yeah, so I'd
Okay,
be
just
on
a little
trail
time
like
padded in
within
there.
like within like 30 to 40 minutes, I'd be on the trail. And then
Yeah.
I'd go for like 17 and a half hours. And usually about
Wow.
80% of the trail, I think I had a pacer with me, and they would carry my food and water. And sometimes I was on my own, and I would carry my own food and water. I would eat about 300 calories an hour, and then see my crew about six, on average, like six times. And during those crew stops, they were at like road crossing. So Rascal and the whole crew, we had this like large caravan following us. They would meet at road crossings, and I would come by and grab whatever food item and like a protein drink. I drank about six to seven protein drinks a day, and those were like 360 calories each. And I think those were like crucial to have. But so I'd start back up on the trail within like a couple minutes of getting to those crew stops, and I'd walk with my food and my protein drink. And we had somebody on top of the pacer that was with me that was called the walker, and somebody would just walk with me out on the trails, about a mile or three quarters of a mile. And I would drink my protein shake and like eat whatever food I had. Then I'd give them my like things and like the protein drink container, and they would bring it back to the crew area. So there's like a lot of things you could do while you're walking instead of like sitting and like drinking the protein shake with the crew. So after, I would do these, 17 and a half hours of running and hiking and walking and whatever mode of transportation was the best in that moment, I would get to the crew anywhere from like 8:30. 8:30 was really good. 8:30 to like 10. 10:30 was pushing it. And I get to the crew, and to keep as consistent mileage as possible, we would tent a lot as well. So normally, like in other FKTs, people try to only stay in the vehicles, and that like caused like a inconsistent amount of miles. I wanted to keep it close to like that average amount, so like anywhere from like 54 to like 60, I wanted to stay in that area.
So what does
And
that mean?
so
Like you
we
guys
just
would
if we
literally
didn't
like would you guys literally like run with the tent, like set up a tent to sleep there instead of like going back to the crew van to sleep? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. So, generally it was Rascal and JP, one of the pacers I had come out. He and Rascal would basically like backpack all three of our gear up a mountain, wherever it was, wherever they ended. It could be a couple miles. I think on average it was about 5 miles that they would hike. There was one time that they had to do like 11. So, they would hike gear in and set up before I even got there. And so, yeah, I would meet them. It was pretty much half tent camping and half van stays, depending on where we're ending for the day. And so wherever I was, I could be ending at the tent, I could be ending at the van. The end of day routine looked like, 7 minutes of stretching, and then somebody would start feeding me, somebody would start taking care of my feet. And then I would try to be in bed by like an hour of when I arrived at that crew area or like the nightly stay area. And I would be in bed, and on average, I think I got like 5 hours of sleep, which still doesn't feel like enough.
Wow, 5 hours
So
of
it
sleep.
was, yeah, it left some to be desired for sure.
Exactly. That is absolutely amazing. My goodness. Wow. So your crew was really out there. Seems like a really well-oiled machine. The got you know, to where you needed to get to. And I kind of want to like go back to the, I keep mentioning it, but like I saw a commenter who was who said, I'm proud of her running, but her napping ability is what makes her world class. For your dirt naps when you when you're out there. I'm sure it wasn't that
That's so
hard
true.
to
I
because
mean,
literally like yeah.
no, it wasn't hard. Like these naps, like sometimes I'd fall asleep, and sometimes, I would just sit there and like sort of like try to recenter myself. But oftentimes, yeah, I would fall asleep pretty instantly, which is incredible to think. Like, I'm not a big napper in everyday life, so the fact that I could just lay down in some dirt and just fall asleep instantly was pretty incredible.
Like, 'cause I was looking at some of the videos. I said she really is knocked out. Like, there could be spiders all up in there. She said, "Nope, it's time to rest."
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you say that because yeah, there was one time I laid down. It was like dawn, and I laid down. My headlamp was still on, and I look like I'm laying down, and I look over, and there's a black widow like making a little nest. And I said, "Nope." I got up and silly. I was like, "Not here. This isn't a good napping
Exactly.
spot."
I am up out of here. That's so crazy. Oh man. And then another like most people have been like congratulatory obviously because you've been doing such an amazing job, but something that I wanted to bring to your attention that you kind of mentioned as well is that there was one person who cracked me up with her blog and it was titled "Dear Tara, Slow Down: How FKTs Are Ruining the Appalachian Trail Experience." And I wanted to read a little bit of it
was
and get your thoughts on
so
that.
funny.
You
Oh
saw
yeah,
it?
give it to me. Oh yeah,
Okay.
I loved it, but I want to hear more of it.
Oh my God, it was so hysterical. So okay, so part of it, she was like, "Dear Tara Dower, slow down. What's all the rush about? Stop and smell the roses. You might just find that you actually enjoy life in the slow lane. At your blistering pace, I doubt you perceive the subtle artistry of the sun's first rays striking dew-kissed ferns the way I do. Can you even hear the babbling brooks and chattering squirrels over your laborious breathing? Personally, I doubt it. What a shame." And then she ends by going, "Now I know you achieved a world-class athletic feat that challenges perceptions of what female athletes are capable of while simultaneously raising tens of thousands of dollars for a nonprofit dedicated to empowering girls, but ignoring all that completely. Have you ever considered how much better your life would be if you took it at a more brisk walk like me?" I was cracking up.
Literally just so funny. I mean, yeah, I mean she nailed it. Like that was a majority of the comments on these. Like typically debauchery happens on Facebook, so generally it was on Facebook where I saw a lot of these comments. But yeah, that was like the main comment from people was like, "Did you even enjoy it? That's not what the Appalachian Trail's about. Like, why can I just enjoy it the way I want to? And also, like, there's a lot of good that comes from it as well." But she, oh, her article, that was so funny. It had me cracking up.
I was a dying. She's like, "Yeah, I know I can't do it, but like maybe just smell the roses a little bit." Like, yeah. But you did talk about like, enjoying it, like stopping, maybe taking a picture or something. Did you stop to smell the roses?
I think I did, and maybe not everyone has the same idea of like what it that's it's so subjective. Like
That's true. That's a good point.
it's everyone has their own opinion about what that looks like. And for me, that sometimes I would stop to like look at a sunset or look at the sunrise. And people think that with these FKTs you're running at like a 8 mile per hour pace. You're like sprinting down the trail. But I was hiking the uphills and I was running at like a not even like a 4 mile per hour pace on the like flats and the downhills. And I think I saw the trails at a lot like in moments that like backpackers, you know, what I'm thinking of is like backpackers and like day hikers. You know, generally you're seeing the trail during the day, you're sleeping at night, and I got to see the trails and I got to see the Appalachian mountain range at night for, you know, I mean, it was upwards of like 6 hours. I was able to like experience what that was like, and it was cool in its own way. Like I saw a bobcat, they're so elusive, and you know,
Oh
I
my
was
God.
able to like see one roaming around at night, and I don't think a lot of people get that opportunity. I saw a lot of
Yeah.
really interesting things. Obviously, I didn't have views. I couldn't see far. You know, usually on the Appalachian Mountains, you don't see a lot of views, but like obviously I didn't see a lot of views, but I saw like this like interesting like nightlife on the trail, which I don't think a lot of people get to see. And I'm not like sprinting down the trail either. I think I experienced a lot of the community, a lot of the culture, and so much of nature, more
That's
diverse nature.
awesome. That is awesome. Speaking, okay. I'm a huge paranormal whatever kind of person. I hear the Appalachian Trail is haunted. Is what was your
Oh my
experience?
goodness.
I'm so serious. That is literally the
I
thing to throw me
saw.
off the trail.
You know, it's funny. I was on TikTok last night and I was watching this totally set up video where they set up the entire Appalachian. Like, they were like showing each other how to skateboard in the Appalachian, like in the mountains, but like at a gas station. And they're like, ooh, like show me how to skateboard. And then all of a sudden they heard this scary noise in the mountains and they freaked out and they ran in their car. And like, oh, just another reason why like the Appalachian Mountains aren't safe. And that's totally not my experience at all. Like, I think maybe me and Rascal met a skinwalker, maybe, but he was safe and he didn't eat us or try to attack us.
Stop. You're not gonna
And like,
brush right
I
over
never.
that, Tara. You're not gonna brush over the fact that you saw a skinwalker on the trail. What? What? Where?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was a skinwalker. It was definitely a skinwalker. If there was this deer in the Shenandoah Valley that was following us for 3 miles on the trail, he was running after us. And he was like, if you ever seen those skinwalker videos where people are like,
Yes.
oh, the animal like was overtaken by a skinwalker, like they're always
Yes.
breathing weirdly. And the I think it was maybe he was running after us, but also I was like, this is definitely a skinwalker. He does not look like a deer. This deer is like following us in very much a an odd way. And I think he was maybe like, it's all jokes aside, like I think he was probably fed a lot by humans,
Yeah.
and he probably like just followed humans all the time because he knew he'd get food from them because it was Shenandoah. No, it was sorry, it was in Pennsylvania, not Shenandoah, but Pennsylvania. Anyways, skinwalkers in Pennsylvania, watch out. But
That
beyond all of that,
is
beyond all of that, you know,
wild.
there's the whole. Yeah, it was he was a sketchy, he was a sketchy deer. But
And you
beyond
just
all of
left
that,
y'all alone.
there
Oh, I'm so
I
sorry. You just left
never
y'all alone. Y'all just went on your way, and you're chilling. Just went your separate ways.
he Oh yeah, he ended up following another hiker. And our crew didn't like me and Rascal were like calling the crew like there's a deer following us right now. And they're like, no way. Like they just thought it was something silly. And so like the deer, we show up to the next crew area and there's no deer with us because he had like departed a mile earlier. And then that hiker that he followed came up on them and the deer was following this hiker. And they're like, no way. The deer is still following this hiker. But
That's so funny.
yeah, it's. Maybe it's a skinwalker, maybe it's just a hungry deer. We'll never know.
We'll never
And
know.
yeah, so I never had an experience where I was like afraid of like running at night. There's just a lot of stories and they're very sensationalized, and I generally feel like more safe in you know, in the woods than I do like in cities or in towns. I think, you know, where I've have run into problems, it's typically with humans and it's never with animals. Animals are very predictable. And also like, yeah, the hauntedness. Yeah, it's kind of fun and a little scary, but I never had any sketchy situations.
I'm so happy for you. Thank goodness. And that makes me a bit happier because that is literally one of the things that I'm like, I heard about you, Appalachian Trail. I heard about all the ghosts left behind. So I don't know. I have only been on it in the daytime, maybe one day in the nighttime. Oh man, that's awesome. You did this all for a good cause, you know, for the Girls on the Run organization. What was the total amount that you were able to raise for them?
I have to check, but somebody a week ago said we raised 50,000, and then Ultra, my sponsor, is going to give 44,000. Yeah. So nearly 100,000. Yeah.
That is crazy. And what was your goal going into it? How much did you want to raise?
Yeah, I wanted to raise 20,000. So we exceeded it quite a bit.
Just a little bit. You knocked it out of the water slightly. That is amazing. Oh my gosh. And so what is this going to be able to help the organization do?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was never part of Girls on the Run. I really wish I was as a kid. Mm-hmm. Luckily you can like be like a mentor or like a coach, which I think I might do here in the future. But they have these really interesting programs for young girls. They not only teach them about running, but they also have programs that teach young girls at this like pivotal age in their life. They teach them about like social and emotional skills and just like mentor them through life and through that. Like I mentioned, those pivotal moments in a young girl's life. So, and they end each like semester or each program with like a 5K run. And it just teaches young girls. Like I remember when I was that young, I was like, there's no way I can do like 5K like all the way through. It teaches young girls. It gives them that confidence that like you can do these things. And it, you know, transitions a lot into like their everyday life as well. Like, what else can I do? If I can do this, what else can I do? And I think that's, it's so important for anyone of that age, but especially young girls.
Why is empowering, you know, young girls and other women so important to you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, kind of like going off like the beginning of this podcast, what we were talking about in the beginning, and like, I think it's so important because there's so much potential in women and in young girls that we haven't fully tapped in yet because of whatever like personal, but also like societal pressures that are put on us, and we're not fully able to express ourselves. So I think, you know, encouraging, inspiring women and young girls to like go for whatever they think they can do, or just like pushing your boundaries. Like I think women, especially in endurance sports, that's the realm I'm in. So I have more of a view onto that, but I think women in endurance sports, like we are on the cusp of like really figuring out like what is possible. I think it's a really interesting time. I think men have fully expressed that. And I think we're in a part in men's endurance sports where they're still breaking boundaries, which is exciting. But I think women are like, you know, discovering those limits. And it's, I really personally am interested to see how far we can go. And I know women have a special gift of endurance. And I just love to see more women getting out there and like pushing those boundaries.
Absolutely. Oh man. And you know, we have people like you to thank, you know, for breaking those barriers and pushing that line even forward more and more. That's awesome. And so what was what has your recovery been like? I did a half marathon like a month ago and I was waddling for 2 days. So, you know, what's your recovery been like?
Yeah, it was kind of similar to that. I waddled a lot, maybe for like a little longer, maybe like 2 weeks I was waddling. But I slept a lot. I ate a lot. It was simple. I have, luckily in these like long FKTs, your body like learns the patterns and it's able to recover, which is crazy to say. And like, some way during these FKTs, which is like insane to say, but yeah, your body kind of like learns like the motions, and it's different from recovering from like, for me with a race, like I feel like the recovery takes maybe not longer, but it's more intense in those first initial days. But for these long FKTs, the recovery takes like way longer, and it might not be as intense, like, as it would be, like I mentioned, in a race. But I have been figuring that out every day, like, allowing myself, listening to my body. What do I want to eat? What do I want to do? Do I really want to run? Do I want to work out? Like, do I need to work out? So I think it's just like listening to your body the best way that you can. And that's been hard to do because in the FKT, for a lot of the FKT, you have to ignore those signals that your body's giving you and push beyond like your bodily responses. And so now it's hard to completely switch that and say like, okay, now it's like I need to take care of you, and what do you want? And trying to decipher those codes.
I mean, and heading up into the mountains definitely helps too, getting away from getting away from,
Oh,
all the
yeah,
hustle and
absolutely.
bustle. You know, and I was kind of thinking this when we were talking, but how the heck do you fund something like this? I mean, you're a pro athlete now, but before, this is your first year as a pro athlete. What were you doing before, in order to keep afloat and fund everything you needed to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I worked at a lot of gear shops. I worked at REI, and if I won a race, I would invest that money back into racing and, still working at REI, trying to fund like whatever life I had. I would try to like put that money back into racing and my ultra marathon. So I won a really to fund like the Appalachian Trail, I won a really large race in Steamboat Springs called Run Rabbit Run, and they have the biggest prize purse in ultra marathons, I think it is. And so I won that and was able to save a lot of that money, pay off some debts, but also like save a lot of that money for the Appalachian Trail.
So you had to work a traditional job in order to, basically support yourself on your passion, your side hustle that's now become your main hustle. Do I have that right? That's talk about outside of work. That's literally, that's how you do it. That is amazing. I wanted to play a speed round with you if you have some time.
Of
All right, so
course.
fun. All right, so fun speed round. So, okay, mountains or beach?
Mountains, absolutely.
Sunrise or sunset?
Sunsets.
Sunsets. Oh, okay. Favorite song on the trail?
It's by Foghorn String Band. It's called Lost Girl, and it's a bluegrass song, but I always get so happy listening to it, and it just reminds me of the AT, so definitely that one for sure.
Nice. Go to candy as the candy mama.
I like Nerd Clusters. If you haven't had them, you should try them. They're really good.
Interesting. I was not expecting that. I was expecting something, I don't know, like chocolate or something. Awesome. Or trail mix.
I should do chocolate.
Piece of gear that you can't live without.
That's a great question. I would have to say it would have to be my shoes. That is the most important thing of any runner's kit, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
My Ultra Olympuses were so key.
Ooh, Ultra Olympuses. I gotta look into that. And it helps you get through mountains. Talk about an ad. It helps you get through mountains and trails and all that. Did you have one pair throughout the entire thing?
No, I went through about five pairs.
Whoa. Five pairs. That is insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. The internet was having this conversation this year. Man or bear in the woods?
Bear. 100% bear. Bear. Bear.
Skinwalker even.
And, oh, yeah. Give me a skinwalker. No men.
Exactly. And I know you were out in the woods so this summer. So I don't know if you were, you know, caught up on this rat beef, but Kendrick or Drake?
Oh, yeah. I did. I did hear a little bit about this. Definitely Kendrick for sure.
Let's go. Okay. You got that right. Exactly. That's awesome. Well, that's the end of the speed round. Thank you for entertaining me. So, you know, Tara, we talked about a whole lot about, you know, what you do out on the trail and stuff. What do you do when you're off the trail? Who is Tara outside of hiking and these ultra marathons and everything?
Oh, she is. It's funny talking about myself in third person. I think I like to be creative. I have a YouTube channel, so I do a lot of like YouTube content, and I also like to indulge in a lot of like YouTube. So generally, if I'm like on my own somewhere, I'm watching YouTube or I'm listening to some sort of creative person, a podcast. I like true crime, and I love to eat really good food. And, you know, I like to say I spend time with my friends. I live all over the place. My friends are all over the country, and like, I can't just go down the road and like hang out with a friend. So it's like, I'm communicating a lot with my friends in different ways, and making plans with them and going on cool adventures with them. And, you know, this coming week, we're going down to a race in Arizona, and I'll be seeing some of my friends there. So, yeah, that's who I am outside of running and outside of racing. That's generally who I am.
What is your best advice on like making friends, keeping them, and just, you know, especially as an adult?
Oh, that's, I think like what's kept me and my like really good friends together is having like similar interests. And we're all like really into supporting each other and our different like endeavors. So we're all like kind of into the endurance sport realm, like either it's like yeah. through hiking or, you know, FKTs or like races. I think we all have that similar interest and we all get psyched for each other. And it's easy to like communicate with them because we have those similar interests. I know like I've lived like different places and it's hard to make friends as an adult yeah. and keep those friends. But, you know, the best friends I've made, and they're all over the country, the best friends I've made are the ones that like, we have very similar interests and we can just like talk about them kind of effortlessly.
That's awesome. Yeah. Because as you get older, it gets so hard to keep track, keep up with people. And yeah, I think those similar interests really do tend to bind us, which is amazing. Tara, you've inspired so many women and girls, you know, in what you've been able to do. What would you want your legacy to be?
Oh, that's a great question. Somebody asked me this yesterday. I think I would want my legacy to, I forgot what I said yesterday, so it's going to be a completely new answer.
Amazing.
I think my legacy, something I would want people to like remember if they're like looking back at like my career or just like my life in general, I think like viewing me as somebody who didn't have like a straight path to success and who wasn't like this, like, incredible athlete throughout my life, but somebody who definitely didn't give up and who kept trying and attempted these goals and at least went for it. And maybe I wasn't the most talented, but I did give my full effort and my full gave my full like effort into a record or into a race or something. And maybe I'm not the most talented, but I definitely won't give up. And I'll do anything it takes to do well or do my best. So I think that's kind of what I hope people take from my life or legacy.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. And I can see what you're talking about. You're talking about you're still working on your confidence because you literally are the best still. And you're like, I might not be the best. I'm like, yeah, yes, you are. Until somebody else comes through and breaks this record, you hold the queen of the trails. Well, thank you so much, Tara. I like so appreciated this conversation. I think people can get a lot out of it, especially when it comes to resilience, never giving up, and just going for it, trying it, and seeing what happens, because you never know what can come out on the other end.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm glad I had this conversation. And in these conversations, I've been able to really almost like process a lot of this experience, but also my experiences prior to the FKT. So it's as much of a, it's as much, does as much for me as it does for you or anyone else I'm talking to. So thank you.
That's awesome. No, that's really awesome. And yeah, of course. Appreciate having you, and I'm sure we will definitely continue talking.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey there, one more thing before you go. First, thank you so much for watching and listening. You didn't have to. You could have done literally anything else with your time. So I am so appreciative. Number two, if you liked what you heard or you resonated with anything, please like, comment, subscribe. Do all the things. All the links will be in the show notes so we can continue exploring this wild, weird, wacky, and awesomely wonderful world outside of work. Skinwalker, even.
Oh
And
yeah, give me a skinwalker, no men.